This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Two segments today. We begin with Chris Wiley of the Roseburg Public Library. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here, Kyle.
Well, I know a lot of things are going on, and for a lot of people, this is sort of this transition from winter, spring, looking ahead to summer. What all is going on over there?
Well, it's a transition time for us, too, because our youth services librarian, Aurora Rapp, is wrapping up spring programming. Now, she's not taking a break. She's behind the scenes getting ready for the summer reading program. That is a 12-week program that starts June 1st, and it's an incentive to read and get lots of prizes, and also to engage in a lot of hands-on activities. Check out our website. We've started populating the calendar, roseburgpubliclibrary.org. Click on the events calendar. That will continue to be populated over the next month.
Now, so you've got the break. What about anything happening the rest of this week?
Well, today is the final day of kids programming for the spring, and it's a STEAM program. I know they're going to be doing some planting. Aurora's getting dirt and seeds and pots, and they're going to have a lot of fun with that. That's at 4 o'clock this afternoon, 4 to 5, and you don't need to register for our programs. Just drop in with your enthusiasm and have a great time. This program is perfect for the pre-K to 5th or 6th grade age range.
All right, so what are some of the things coming up next month?
Oh, we really are focusing on some adult programming next month because the kids are taking more of a break. So May 1st, that's just a couple of weeks away. I can't even believe it.
Yeah.
6:30 in the evening, we are going to host a musical concert. We have done maybe a couple of others in the entire time we've been open. But in this case, it's Celtic Harps, Rare Instruments, and Wondrous Stories, presented by Lisa Lynn and REA Frankfurter. They are Oregonians who play Celtic harps, Swedish nickel harpa, Ukrainian banduras, and many more instruments. You can go on their website, Lisa Lynn, it's LISALYNNE.com, to listen to their beautiful music and get a taste for it before you join us.
Wow. Yeah, it has been a while since you've had music in there.
It's not particularly common for us, and I don't really know why. So I thought, let's give this a try. They tour libraries around the state and reached out. It was a perfect opportunity to just try something a little different for us. So that's May 1st, Thursday, 6:30 to 7:30. It is a free hour-long concert.
And later in the month, sounds like an interesting exhibit.
Well, the exhibit is actually up right now. That is our Leticia Carson exhibit provided by the Oregon Black Pioneers. And staff from the Oregon Black Pioneers are going to be at the library Thursday, May 15th, 6:30. Oregon's Black History, 450 years in 45 minutes. They have a lot to share, and we're looking forward to that again Thursday, May 15th at 6:30 p.m.
And you said that's already up?
The exhibition is up. So there are 8 panels, and this was debuted at the Douglas County Museum a couple of years ago. 8 panels about Leticia Carson, who was one of the first Black homesteaders, if not the first Black female homesteader in Oregon, right here in Douglas County. Lots of great information on those panels.
Yeah, interesting story there, and I'm sure they'll have a lot more to say at that program.
Yes, in addition to her story, lots of eye-opening examples of the work of Black Oregonians. Now, the Leticia Carson exhibit is at the library through May 30th. Anytime the library's open, people can come in. It's set up in the main area of the library and take a look around.
And maybe we should remind people of your hours.
Sounds like a good idea, Kyle. We're open Tuesday and Wednesday, 10 to 6, Thursday, 10 to 8, Fridays and Saturdays, 10 to 2.
But you're closed one day next week, right?
We are. We have never done this in the time I've been here where we've closed the library for staff training. So the library will be closed Wednesday, April 23rd, all day. And we're going to lock the book drops because the entire staff is going to training in Eugene. And we aren't going to be able to manage it if something happened to the book drops. So please hang on to your materials. We don't charge overdue fees. Take a break from the library for the day. We'll be open again on the 24th at 10 a.m.
And as you look ahead for some of the things, I know that you're probably already thinking about other things in the summer as well.
And that really is around this summer reading program. Huge work involved behind the scenes. But I have to tell you that we are hosting Harry Potter Day once again. It's the last Saturday of July. I'm going to pull up the date for that. It's going to be an all ages fun time. Now, of course, there's a quilt again for kids. It's a raffle drawing. If you come before noon, you get your name in the drawing. At noon, we pull a name and they get a quilt that's designed and created by Aurora's mom. We have huge thanks to Ashley Oberg for doing that for us year after year. That date is Saturday, July 26th. It will be from 10 to 1:30. There will be lots of hands-on activities. Wildlife Safari is going to bring some of their critters too, and I've heard there might be snakes.
Any, like a rhinoceros, perhaps?
Wouldn't that be awesome?
May not fit, though.
I think maybe a little bit smaller. Smaller, Kyle.
Okay. I always try to push the limits on these things, and I always get pushback. I don't know why that is.
I don't understand.
Yeah. So libraries, talk about all the things that are available through the library that are digital, not necessarily there, but you access them through your site.
That's right. You don't even need to have a library card for some of these resources at this point. They are provided free from the State Library of Oregon. And that includes some material, especially for scholars and young scholars to do some research for their papers. You can go on to our website to connect to them. And they're called the Gale Databases, G-A-L-E. Provide wonderful resources at no cost to Oregonians. We have subscriptions to Libby, which used to be known as Overdrive or Library to Go, as well as Cloud Library. Now, they provide ebooks, e-audiobooks, and Libby also has e-magazines. Digital magazines have become incredibly popular over the last few years as they quit printing. This is a format now that we provide access to, and you can get thousands, literally thousands of magazines this way.
Now, back in the day, not that I'm that old, one of my weekend things used to be to come down to the library and read through some of the magazines. There were some things that I really liked, but I really couldn't afford to subscribe to them then. But a lot of that's all digital now, right?
They've moved it digital. We find out all the time that a print magazine is ceasing publication. We're down to fewer than 25 print subscriptions. And a lot of that, yes, some of it is due to cost and use, but a lot of it has to do with they simply don't print them anymore. And so last year, our library commission said, yeah, we really should use some operating budget money to provide digital access to magazines. And we're getting about 500 checkouts a month from this. It's pretty darn popular.
Wow. It is really, you know, that was an interesting thing to watch. I had some magazines that I later did subscribe to once I could afford them. And they've all gone that way, too.
And there are a few that are still in print, and folks bring them all the time to donate. So we do have a free magazine exchange. It's curated by the Friends of the Roseburg Public Library. If your magazines are 3 years old or newer, bring them to the library. We share them, and you can go get some more from that free magazine rack.
Anything else people ought to know about the library right now?
Go to the website, roseburgpubliclibrary.org. Always a lot going on. We're on Facebook and Instagram as well.
All right, Chris Wiley, Roseburg Public Library. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Kyle.
1245, segment two in a moment on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson coming up at 1. Segment 2 today is because this is National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week. Try to say that 3 times fast. Heather Gray is the Douglas County 911 Operations Manager. That's where she's at right now. And joining us, Heather, thanks for being on today.
Thanks, Kyle. I appreciate you having me on.
One of the aspects about this week is just talking about the importance of the county's 911 dispatchers. And I guess, first of all, how many people are in this department? What kinds of things do they do that maybe people aren't aware of?
So I am lucky enough to be the manager, and I've got 4 really dedicated supervisors and 16 dispatchers that I manage. And we just really run the gamut of everything that is needed for public safety here in Douglas County. We're the primary answering point for all 911 calls anywhere in the county. We dispatch all police, fire, and EMS. We do transfer calls to OSP and Reedsport for their jurisdictions, but otherwise it's us that we're handling everything from, you know, really minor things to the most serious.
What kind of training does it take to do this kind of work?
We do a lot of on-the-job training. We kind of throw new people in when they get here. So we do about 6 months of working with a training officer, sitting at the desk with them and learning as you go. And then we also attend 3 weeks at the Department of Public Safety Standards in Salem.
Now, what is an average shift like? And I'm asking a question that I suspect I already know the answer to.
Yes, it is hard to say there's an average shift. That's one of the things that is so unique about this job is every day is something different. Every day is a new day. What I find so impressive about my dispatchers is we could be doing absolutely nothing, basically, just kind of crocheting, working on projects or things like that, and then the switch flips when something's bad is happening, and everyone just works together to get that handled as quickly and efficiently as we can.
And when large events take place, like a recent flood event, how do you deal with that? Do you have to pull people in? Do you ever add staff during a shift because of the demand?
Well, I'm really lucky here in Douglas County. All of our dispatchers work really well with each other, and we know that we don't want to be the one stuck without any extra help when we're off duty. So for the flood on the 16th, we had all kinds of dispatchers come in. We actually ran out of desks. We didn't have any more spots for them to work, and it was so needed because on an average Sunday, we take about 400 calls, and on the day of the flooding, we took 1,500.
Yeah, boy, I could tell. I was in much of the day, and normally from my end of things with the police scanner on, it's pretty quiet. Crickets might even be a good term, especially early in the morning. And boy, by 5 or so in the morning, it was back-to-back, wall-to-wall, and never stopped for several hours.
Yes, it gets to be a lot when it's back-to-back and you can't even get up for a break. But those are the times that we're really at our best and making sure everyone is as safe as we can get them.
So how did you get started in this department? What was your background?
So my background is actually in journalism. I was a reporter here locally for print for the newspaper, and I actually did a story on a 911 dispatcher and just found it to be so fascinating that when they had a position open, I threw my hat in the ring, and I've been here since 2011.
Wow, and kind of worked your way up through things. Do you remember what your first day was like as a dispatcher?
Yes, I still remember some of my very first calls, the first people I talked to who, you know, just needed an ambulance or were yelling at me. And it's something that's very different every day, but I never had a migraine until I started working here, and I learned what those were like in training. So it's a really tough time when you're starting out here, but we all are such a good family. It's really helpful.
Now, I was looking at a document earlier. I wasn't able to print it, but talk about the number of calls that you take.
Yeah, so in 2024, we handled a total of 231,000 calls. 130 of those were on the non-emergency lines. So we handle a lot of stuff after hours that people don't necessarily know they're calling and getting us. And a lot of times we'll have to put people on hold. So then we have to answer those 911 calls at our priority. And we took about 54,000 911 calls last year.
Wow, that is... That's a lot.
It is, yes. Yeah, we usually have about 4 dispatchers on duty, so you split that across them, and we're pretty busy all the time.
And these calls can go from a very, what might seem routine, to something almost, well, life-threatening.
Absolutely, yeah, but you never know what's going to be on the other end of the line, and it's always interesting to have such a high adrenaline call. And then I remember specifically one time I hung up with a really tough call, and the next call was somebody asking me what time it was.
Oh, my. And we have other things than calling 911 for that. What about, in fact, that brings up a good point. What should people not call 911 for that they do sometimes?
A lot of times people say they can't find the non-emergency line or things like that, and it really does kind of slow down our center. So if you can prepare that ahead of time to get our non-emergency number written down or stored in your phone, when you do need to call the police for something that's not life-threatening, we'd much prefer to have you on that line than having to put people having emergencies on hold and answer those. So. But we always want people to call if they need us. We don't want them to question it. We definitely want to talk to you if you need police or law enforcement or medical.
Now, how many screens as a dispatcher are they looking at one time?
We have one really large curved screen that we use for the middle, and then we've got 4 other screens. We're working on a total of 3 computers at a time.
Wow. So you're trying to keep track, like, for instance, where officers or deputies are located or where things are happening, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, we're constantly trying to figure out where everyone is. We check on our officers and deputies every hour. We watch their progress as they go to calls. We're always getting more and more technology in this job. We're now accepting text to 911 as an option. If you're not able to call or somewhere where you don't want someone to overhear you, you can text us at just 911, and we're able to accept those calls. We're also now able to accept live video and photos in certain situations. So that's been a real change since I've started here.
Wow. Do you get very many text calls?
Actually, last year we had 800 of them.
Wow. Talk about kind of the shift aspect of this, because dispatchers are needed around the clock. Do people, is it kind of like the deputies and officers that kind of rotate different shift schedules, or how is that set up?
Yeah, we do. We follow a lot of the same policies and procedures as the sheriff's office. We're under the Douglas County Sheriff's Office. So we rotate every 3 months. It's based on a seniority bid. So our newer dispatchers a lot of times will end up working a lot of night shifts. A lot of my dispatchers are moms, and they'll just pick whatever shift kind of works for them and their school schedules. And, yeah, so it's a lot for them. We're working 12-hour shifts most days, and it can be a lot.
So does that mean you work like kind of in 3-day segments or 4-day segments?
Yeah, 1 week will be 3 days and the next week will be 4 days.
So you do get some time to kind of decompress, because I imagine there are shifts that you come off of after 12 hours that you really need a break.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it is nice to have some more time off between shifts sometimes you need that to get away and not listen to the ringing phones and the radio traffic and all that.
Wow. If somebody ever thought about this as a potential career, what kinds of things do they need to know?
Oh, well, we're always open to having someone come in and observe us. We have what we call kind of sit-alongs instead of a ride-along. So if anyone's ever interested, they can contact the sheriff's office, and we'll get them in here to see what we do on a daily basis and, just show them everything we do.
All right. It is National Telecommunicators Week, and Heather Johnson, Heather Gray, I'm looking at three things at once here. Heather Gray, Operations Manager for Douglas County 911. Heather, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thanks, Kyle.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.